no one in this world belongs to us except our dearly beloved Satguru. This is the Bhajan Apana Koi Nahin on page 137. Oh man, don't be saying mine, mine. There's no guarantee of breath. Your life is as fragile as sugar candy thrown into water. Oh man, don't be so full of ego. Death is on your head. One day, you fool, you may even drown without water. You're wearing dust, you dress in dust, even your pillow is dust. One day, madman, your body will return to dust. As long as oil and wick are in the lamp, the light gets brighter and brighter. When both are finished, the dead body is carried to the graveyard. What is the use of stitching the old clothes again and again? No one is the friend of the heart. All have selfish motives. No one in this world belongs to us except our dearly beloved Satguru. Bhajan of Kabir Sahib on page 137.
Apna koi nahi hai ji ke apna Satguru pyara ji apna koi nahi hai ji ke apna Satguru pyara ji na kar bande meri meri zamda ki parwasa na kar bande meri meri zamda ki parwasa jeevan tera aise jaisa paani vich patasa apna koi nahi hai ji ke apna satguru pyara ji apna koi nahi hai ji ke apna satguru pyara ji na kar bande khudi takabbar sir pe maut namani na kar bande khudi takabbar sir pe maut namani ek din pagle aisa aave tu doobe bin paani अपना कोई नहीं है जी के अपना सतगुरु प्यारा जी अपना कोई नहीं है जी के अपना सतगुरु प्यारा जी माटी ओढ़ना माटी पहनना माटी का सिरहाना जी माटी ओढ़ना माटी पहनना माटी का सिरहाना जी एक दिन पगले ऐसा आवे माटी में मिल जाना जी अपना कोई नहीं है जी के अपना सतगुरु प्यारा जी अपना कोई नहीं है जी के अपना सतगुरु प्यारा जी जब तक तेल दीप में बाती जगमग जगमग हो रही जब तक तेल दीप में बाती जगमग जगमग हो रही जल गया तेल न खुट गई बाती लाश सिवियां को तो लई अपना कोई नहीं है जी के अपना सतगुरु प्यारा जी अपना कोई नहीं है जी। के अपना सतगुर प्यारा जी। पाटा चोला हुआ पुराना कब लग सीवे दर्जी। पाटा चोला हुआ पुराना कब लग सीवे दर्जी। दिल का महरम कोई न मिलया सब मतलब के गर्जी। अपना कोई नहीं है जी कि अपना सतगुर प्यारा जी। अपना कोई नहीं है जी कि अपना सतगुर प्यारा जी।
No one in this world belongs to us except our dearly beloved Sadhguru. Next Saturday, first Saturday in November, be November 7th, I believe, there will be a Zoom virtual memorial for our dear brother Jonas Gerard. People from all over the world will be participating. And that will be at 11 a.m. Pacific time. There will be 10 different speakers, including his daughter Mira, who will both speak and also show slides and so forth. And I will be there also. So, something to consider. Jonas is not the only dear one who has recently left. Mark Ehrman has written this obituary for our sister Virginia Andrus, who is recently gone. She was a co-worker of his for the Bhandara in San Francisco and helped him every year. And he explains her position in the Sangha. So I will read what Mark wrote. Our dear sister Virginia passed away on October 27th, 2020, in a Washington hospital that's in California. On the 26th, she caught COVID-19. She was rushed to the hospital. Today, the 27th, her nephew said that she was struggling breathing. He instructed the COVID-19 doctor to give her pain relief. Before the doctor could administer the drugs, Virginia was taken up by Masters Kripal and Ajay. Virginia suffered her whole life, people not able to understand her, listen to her, accept her. She is a very kind and loving person who is hearing impaired from birth. She loved all animals and nature, especially her summer spot at South Lake Tahoe. She served the Sangha tirelessly for 12 years, hosting the meditation in her apartment on Pacific Avenue after Sam Friedman went east. Any seva that she partook in was done lovingly, selflessly, and with perfection. She was generous to those around her, to the Sangha, and to all who she met. She sat at the book table for many years at Master Kripal's meditation retreat, that's the Bhandara in February, taking care of all the financial transactions with Margaret Conway, the group leader in San Francisco. She even created a whole gift card line of the Masters that she edited on her computer, pixel by pixel, to get the reproduction right. She also sewed many of the cushions that we all sit on in satsang. She also decoded the entire mailing list that was on her old computer. When she purchased her new computer, WordPerfect no longer was in existence. Virginia went to the Mac store and had the tech person retrieve her data from the Master Kripal Meditation Retreat mailing list. She literally decoded each character one at a time to reassemble the master list. Each year she worked with Charlotte to organize and update that mailing list. I was there 1 year and saw how she carefully printed all the return addresses on the envelopes, then the person's name. An incredible woman. She had a deep connection to Sant Ajay Singh, whom she loved dearly. Her nephew and grandnephews are whom she has left behind. There are sevadars who are very well known, and people, you know that they are sevadars, and there are sevadars who are almost completely unknown. Nobody knows that they're there. But in many ways, they do. They are probably greater in the eyes of the Master than those who are greater in the eyes of the world. I remember in Florida in 1960, actually 1964 by then, at a parent's house in Fort Lauderdale. Master was staying there. Judith and I were staying at her aunt's house in Miami. And Meta's husband, Philip, was middle-aged businessman, respectable type guy, unassuming, didn't say much, not active in the Sangat. Etta was the group leader. She worked with Jerry Turk. On the last satsang of that occasion, that particular retreat, at the very end of his last discourse, he said, I forget exactly how he introduced it, but he said, I have respect for our brother Philip Perrin, who, while all of you are asleep, is here in the kitchen washing dishes, washing all your vessels, the vessels of all of you. That's how he put it. Because Philip would do that. He would go after everything was over, he would go in the kitchen, which was a horrible mess, and wash everything all by himself. And Master knew it, and Master appreciated it. And believe me, he appreciates what Virginia has contributed, as well as what Jonas and all the others who have recently gone have contributed. Today I want to read some very personal stuff, and I want to read it because what I want to talk about today is, or the various readings will work toward, is the protection of the Master, not just the protection, but I would say the protective love of the Master, the way in which the Master is concerned for us, which I have had, you know, enormous evidence of in my life. You know, there have been other times when I have thought it should be there and it seemed to me that it wasn't, and I complained bitterly and got angry and everything like that. And then I've discovered that it had been there all along, but that my angle of vision was not quite what it could have been. Anyway, I want to read this section from my book, The Years with Kripal, Stumbling Toward God, about when Judith and I came back on the path. After we were married, we were off the path for a couple of years, broke all the commandments, some more than others, and in the meantime settled down in Sanbrinton, New Hampshire, not at the ashram, obviously, by then, but in the town of Sanbrinton, where my parents lived and where I had grown up. And I got a job working as a printer at the Journal Transcript, the weekly paper, in Franklin, New Hampshire, very nearby. So this is how Master got me back onto the path, if you could say I was away from it. So the period of our non-meditation was exactly 2 years, September 1959 to September 1961. One afternoon that September, just before our son Eric was born, I was working on a paper cutter at the print shop when the thought came to me completely unexpectedly. Suppose I went back on the path. What would it be like? I began thinking as I worked of all the adjustments and accommodations I would need to make before such a thing could happen. At first it seemed impossible. By the end of the afternoon, I knew that it had already happened in spite of me. I was going back on the path. I went home and told Judith, and she was astounded. She didn't share my feelings then, but she did a little later. The next morning, I got up early and sat for meditation, first time in 2 years. I assumed that it would be as easy as it had been before I had stopped. I got a bitter lesson indeed, one of the bitterest I had ever gotten up to that time. I sat with my eyes closed and saw nothing whatsoever, no light at all. I listened for the sound and there was dead silence. With one great rush, I understood the enormity of what I had done. I had been given the greatest of gifts and I had thrown it away. Earlier in the book, I describe how meditation was very easy for me the first year after I was initiated, so easy that I took it for granted. Tears of self-recrimination and self-pity flooded my eyes as I recalled how easy it had been and how thoroughly I had taken for granted that precious gift. I understood very well that now I would have to work hard and struggle in order to regain that which I had lost. That day I wrote a letter to the Master. I worked very hard over it, as I was aware that I had not been worthy of what he had given me, and I wanted to impress him. I mailed the letter, and a few days later there was a letter from him in the mailbox. I was amazed. A few days? It took usually a month for letters to get to the Master and back. What could this mean? I read the letter, and it was clear that he was not replying to my letter at all. He had written me without my writing him, a very unusual circumstance. Reflecting further, I realized that he must have written the letter about the time I had decided to come back on the path, that his attention had been directed toward me at that time. It was my first awareness of the protection of the Master, but by no means the last. This was also the time when my son was born. Judith had not had a good experience with the birth of Miriam in the hospital at Reno. She had wanted a natural childbirth, but there was little recognition of that back then. And although the doctor had promised her that he wouldn't use forceps, in the event he did. So she determined very early in her pregnancy with Eric that he would be born at home. She was in touch with a group of home birth mothers called the League of Liberated Women, and they had produced an extensive literature about their experiences. They used a manual called Emergency Childbirths, intended for police, firefighters, taxi drivers, and others who might be stuck in a situation with a mother about to deliver. And most of them had given birth at home with only their husbands in attendance. Midwives were very hard to find in 1961. At my insistence, because the prospect of home delivery with only me there scared me to death, Judith tried to find a doctor who would attend her, but she could not. So it ended up with only me there, as I had dreaded. But with the grace of God, everything went beautifully. I had read the manual and got enough out of it to know what to do, thank God. But we managed to terrify my family and half the town of Sanbrinton, including our landlady, who found out what we were doing only at the last minute. But I counted a few times in my life more awe-inducing than the hours I spent accompanying Judith in her labor and the minutes during which Eric emerged into the world for the first time. God, he was beautiful. And you may wonder why I include that. The fact is that the Master's protection was every second of that experience, which, you know, took many hours in our house. I think Eric was born around 10 p.m., but Judith had gone into labor in the early afternoon. She had called me at work, and I had gone home early. Master was with us every second. I cannot tell you with what terror I went into that experience. Sometime after he was born, I received another letter from the Master, dated October 9th, 1961. This one in answer to the letter that I had written him. 13 years later, in October 1974, in the month after Kripal had left his body for the final time, and we were all in deep grief, I reread that letter, found great solace in it, and published it in Satsang Desh, Kripal's monthly magazine that I had been editing, with the following editorial note. This beautiful letter has been a constant source of encouragement and consolation since I received it 13 years ago this month. I had written Master in a mood of deep despair over having wasted 2 years of my life away from him, and over the fear of nuclear war, which seemed imminent. Some readers will recall that year of the fallout shelter, when we were being encouraged to accept the inevitability of wholesale catastrophe, and solid citizens were debating the ethics of shooting their neighbors if they dared to encroach on their shelters. The absurdity of the world and the whole worldly outlook on which I had staked my identity came home to me in an awful rush, and the Master pulled me back to him in the space of one afternoon. But confusion, resentment, and despair remained. How could God let things like nuclear wars become so probable? How could he create such a world? Out of such a mood was forged the first honest letter I ever wrote to Master. This was his reply. And this is now the text of Master's letter to me. I am glad to find that you have achieved a stable existence in a small rural town and have learnt the trade of a printer to carry on a smooth life. A settled and peaceful life is a helping factor for the spiritual undertakings. My best wishes are with you all. I am sorry that you had for some long time past neglected your meditations and grown careless in diet and generally lost interest in spiritual things. I am glad that you are again meditating and have taken a turn for your spiritual side. This will stand in your good stead. You should not take things only from physical angle. While one has to perform physical duties, the duties towards one's own self and God are not less important. Is not body more than raiment and life more than the meat? What does it profit a man if he gains the possessions of the whole world and loses one's own soul? The physical life, together with all its possessions and allurements, is subject to decay and disintegration. The precious moments of earth life spent in the holy meditations are superbly best utilized and are a step in the right direction towards one's eventual return to one's true eternal home. Whether by ups and downs of the world or inner yearnings, one is fortunate to tread on this path of deliverance. You have got the sacred books and at present are reading Nam or Word. What you read in these books is to become a part of your life, and this you will achieve step by step if you are regular and devoted in meditations and develop within from day to day. Man is the noblest of all creation, and the highest ideal in this body is to meet the Lord, and for that purpose he has to know himself first. Self-knowledge precedes God-knowledge. Man has made wonderful progress physically and intellectually, but his spiritual side has been ignored. He is gaining control over the forces of nature in the shape of hydrogen bombs, etc., which are threatening the destruction of all mankind. Had he gained self-knowledge before having this control of forces of nature, these very things would have gone to the service of mankind. These weapons are being used for gaining supremacy over the others. Even the darkest clouds have a silver lining somewhere. To err is human. By suffering, one learns a lesson and tries to avoid sin and looks for virtuous life. This threat of destruction will go a long way to change the trend of humanity for the better, to live and let others live too. Providence has his own miraculous ways for guiding the destiny of child humanity. But the fact remains that a living master is a great blessing, and all those coming under his protective care and guidance will pass off unscathed by following his commandments, namely, love God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. If we give more value to a thing than is intrinsically due it, the fear of its loss will be considerably out of proportion to the actual facts. You need not worry about anything. Being under the protective care of the great master power, you are really a blessed soul, having always at your disposal the facility of drawing on that great power. The way how to do it is already with you. If you will just walk one step, he will come down a million of steps. And you know, this saying is very common, but it usually says 100 steps. Master says a million steps here, and I believe that he had to come down a million of steps for me. I was so far down at this point. He will come down a million of steps to pull you, help you, and guide you at every stage. You have simply to tune your receptivity to the fountainhead. The way to do it is to faithfully obey him and devotedly carry on as enjoined. All action has corresponding reaction. An individual action has an individual reaction. Collectively, people are asked to do ethical actions. This brings up good collective reaction. Reverse of it produces collective bad reaction. Nature has its own way of correcting and fulfilling reactions of individual good and bad action. Likewise, collective reactions are to be fulfilled. One may not be able to truly understand the depth of these things, for his perception and understanding is limited to gauge these depths. Internal ascension into higher regions opens our vision to see things clearly. We should, therefore, strive fully, honestly, faithfully, and diligently to proceed within. Those who are earnest and devoted are crowned with success. Many things become clear, which otherwise, with all the reasoning and intelligence, will be at best hazy and foggy. But to those who are regularly devoted to meditation in the accurate way, their inner development takes them face to face to the radiant form of the Master within, in which God power appears, who talks to them as we talk outside, guides them in all matters. When the time comes for their leaving the physical body, he tells them that they have to go. There's nothing strange in it. It is every day happening. The spiritual aspirants inculcate a sense of aversion for the sensuous pleasures as they have tasted the elixir of Nam within with the grace of the Master. All beauty and glory lies within. And if you will please be lovingly devoted to your holy meditations in an accurate way, as discussed in a copy of Brief Instructions which I enclose for your guidance, you will find that you will be benefited immensely with His grace. So please be lovingly devoted with deep faith and sacred earnestness. Master Power working overhead will be extending all feasible help, grace, and protection. And I'd like to point out that that letter was written to me after two years of violating almost every single commandment he gave. And there is not one word of reproach or condemnation in it. He forgave me totally, and he knew very well all the things that I had done, because that's what I needed at that point. Anyway, the days continued, and so did my struggles with meditation. What had once been ridiculously easy was painfully difficult, and I usually did not sit for more than a half an hour. After a few months, I did begin to hear the sound again, but the light was kept from me, except for one isolated but joyful sitting about a year after I started again, until the Master came in person and gave it back to me. Some months later, in the spring of 1962, I learned that there would be a big gathering of disciples from all over the East Coast in Boston on the first weekend in May. I had not seen any brothers or sisters except for Nina, because Judith and I had gone up to the ashram in Vermont and had met with Nina after, who had been a very good friend, was very aware of. We had all been together up on the, before it was an ashram. Except for Nina, since I had left the path more than 2 years before. I wanted to go, but I was afraid. I was afraid the others would be more spiritual than me, that they would judge and condemn me both for having left the path and for the circumstances under which I left it, that I would not be at home in such rarefied company and that I would not like it. And I was afraid of the hazards or uncertainty that precedes anything new, or any major departure from the norm. But I also wanted to go very much. So I drove down to Boston on a beautiful Saturday morning, and since the meeting was to be held on Marlborough Street, I parked my old Jeep station wagon in a parking lot near where Marlborough Street runs into the public gardens. Then I walked up the street. As I grew nearer to the building where the meetings were being held, all my fears rose up in one mighty rush, and I began to sweat and tremble. The closer I came, the more certain I was that I couldn't go in. I was noticing the numbers on the doors, and as I drew abreast of the correct house, I made up my mind with absolute conviction. No, I will not go in. I'll call up some of my old friends from the coffee corner and drink beer with them. And I kept on walking. Not more than 3 steps later, a large, heavy-set, white-haired woman, neatly dressed in black, whom I had never seen before, stood squarely in my way and spoke to me. "Hey, do you know which house this Hindu thing is in?" I said politely, "Well, I believe it's in that one there," pointing. She looked me in the face a moment and then said, "Come on, let's go in." Grabbed me by the wrist with a vice-like grip and led me into the house, up the stairs, right into the meeting room. Now, this woman was a real person. I later got to know her a little bit, although we never discussed this incident. She was a real person, not an apparition conjured up by the master. But if she had been an apparition, the effect of her appearance on me could not have been greater. This was the second time that the master had deliberately and directly interceded with me to save me from myself. And while it would not be the last time, in some respects it remains in my memory as the most miraculous of all my experiences with him. This incident in bright-knit sunlight on Marlborough Street in Boston, with the master working through the form of an unknown woman, perhaps symbolizes better than any other the basic benevolence of the universe once an individual seeker has committed him or herself to its care. For the fact is that those 2 days of meetings were wonderful. No one judged me. I was treated with great love and respect by everyone. All my fears proved groundless, and I received an enormous lift. Had I not gone in, I doubt that I would have survived. I needed very badly the company of those who were doing the same thing I was. I had gone as far as I could alone, and the master knew it. And there is another incident that I have never talked about publicly. Well, I have a children's satsang occasionally, I think. One time I was asked when I was doing children's satsang at Sant Bani Ashram during one of the retreats there a few years ago to talk about the protection of the master. And I told them this story. But this was a few years later, during the master's 1963 tour, although we were not with him at the moment. He had been to Sant Bani, created the ashram, and then had gone on to other places. And we had gone to Toronto to see him there, and had come back, and we were preparing to go to Louisville. And this was in that period between Toronto and Louisville. To live in the big house, keep the water going and all that stuff was too much for me at that point. So we were living in the little house, which was even had even less conveniences than the big house. But anyway, we were in there, and the house was full. My kids, Miriam and Eric, were sleeping up on the second floor in the only room up there. And in the front room were Helen Goodnow and her son Johnny. Helen later married Ted Hastings. And Johnny was a good friend of Miriam and Eric. And he was Miriam's age. They were sleeping in the front room in the second and the first floor. And then there was the kitchen. And then there was a room off the kitchen, which is like a big closet, later became our bathroom. And that's where Judith and I were sleeping. We were sleeping on the floor. And it was chilly night in November. And had a wood stove, wood fire going in the stove. And I was sleeping soundly, and I had this dream. Now, Mr. Khanna had a secretary called Maud Freeman. Actually, I became very fond of her as time went by. But she was a very devoted sevadar, very hardworking, and very imperious. She was the kind of person, if you told her to do something, you did it. You didn't think twice. You know, she was had that way about her. She could do that. Anyway, I was sleeping soundly, and I had this dream that Maud Freeman is standing there, and there is this big green urn. She was standing, came up to about her chin, or maybe her top of her chest, and she was standing there with her arms on it, and she wanted me to get up and see what was in the urn. And I did, oh boy, I didn't want to do it. I wanted to stay asleep. And she was absolutely insistent, get up. You got to see what's here. Get up. And I got up. You know, I woke up and I was on my knees on the floor. I had gotten that far up without even waking. And I thought, geez, what is going on? And I had no idea. And I got up, I walked out into the kitchen. Just, I didn't know what I was doing, just standing there aimlessly. I looked at the stove, and as I looked at it, the stovepipe came out of the wall, just like that, very, very slowly. Sorry. It just eased itself out, and the smoke started filling up the house. And because I was standing there looking at it, you know, I was able to take the stovepipe and shove it back in without a second's thought. Had I been asleep, the whole house, everyone would have probably suffocated before anyone woke up. In any event, I was very, very grateful, and I often wondered why Master had not told me to wake up himself, but had sent Maude Freeman to do it. And I decided that if Master had been there, I would have been so interested in looking at him that I might not have paid attention to what he was telling me. Anyway, he didn't, and she did, and I was very grateful. But there have been many instances like that, and with Sanchi also in the second volume, his number of instances. And my point is, you know, that the Master is the Paraclete. Jesus in the farewell discourses in the Gospel of John, which Master Kripal had memorized and knew by heart, all three chapters of them, says that the Paraclete, the Holy Spirit, will come and be, and he will be with you. The Paraclete is translated in the King James Version as Comforter, which is not bad. It's an okay translation, but the Greek actually translates better as Advocate. In other words, someone who looks after our interests, someone who cares about us, not about them in relation to us, someone who is our, you could say, and if we understand Kyle as the judge, then the Master is our defense attorney, okay? And that's why I always say it is a great mistake, tremendous mistake, world-shattering mistake, to think of the Master as a judge. He is never a judge. He is our attorney. And if he tells us some things which we take as judgment, we can just assume that they're there to protect us. Anyway, that is the way in which the Master functions, in my experience. All right, I want to finish by reading this brief section from Master Kripal's wonderful little book on prayer, beginning with a hymn from Swamiji Maharaj from the Sarbachan poetry. Listening to the dun, the sound current, the mind gets stilled. None of the myriad of ways can work this miracle. The yogin practices yogic exercises. The gnani is immersed in gnana. The hermit tires himself out in lone solitude. The anchorite does endless austerities. Those who meditate on the mental patterns, they too suffer from a great delusion. Learning and knowledge are not of much avail, for the wise in the end have to rue their wisdom. The pundit engages in the recitation of the Vedas, but all his sacred lore fails to take him any nearer to God. No other means are of any consequence whatever. The only beneficial way is that of Shabad. When a master of the sound current appears on the scene, the disciple too begins to feel the yearning of the new birth. With the practice of the Surat Shabad Yoga, the mind stuff gradually sinks within itself till nothing remains. Swami Shivdayal Singh. And Master Kripal says, when once this contact with Nam is established, the sadhak always feels the presence of the higher power, and the power remains forever with him, wherever he may be, on the snowy mountaintops or in the burning desert sands. Reveling in the greatness of that power, he leaves all his cares to him and becomes indifferent to everything around him. He cheerfully accepts whatever comes his way as coming from him for his benefit alone. He consciously sees the divine will at work and smilingly surrenders himself to it with words of genuine gratitude on his lips. He has no longer any wishes and desires of his own except what may be of God. Now he works as a mere instrument, moving like an automaton, under the influence of that power. He sees all creatures, high and low, just as tiny specks set in an orderly harmony in the immense universe surrounding him. He now divines a procession which is orderly, an order which is harmonious, obeying a will infinitely above him and yet infinitesimally careful of him. In this way is established a complete harmony between the soul of man and the soul of the universe. At every step he cries forth, "Let thy will be done." All creatures, the highest to the lowest, are at thy mercy, and thou carest for them one and all. Whatever pleaseth thee, that is best. Nanak has no other wish but this. Whatever pleaseth thee is good. Thou art forevermore, O Formless One. Guru Nanak. And that phrase, that sentence, he now divines a procession which is orderly, an order which is harmonious, obeying a will infinitely above him and yet infinitesimally careful of him. In this way is established a complete harmony between the soul of man and the soul of the universe. If there's any two sentences that explain what the path is, what it really, really, really is, it's those two sentences.
ਸਾਨੂੰ ਪਤਾ ਹੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਸੰਤ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਵਲੀ ਫਕੀਰ ਮਾਲਕ ਦੇ ਪਿਆਰੇ ਜਦ ਵੀ ਉਹ ਸੰਸਾਰ ਵਿੱਚ ਆਉਂਦੇ ਹੈ ਉਹ ਕੋਈ ਆਪਣੇ ਮਿਸ਼ਨ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਸਤਸੰਗਾਂ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਰੀਤੀ ਰਿਵਾਜ ਨਹੀਂ ਰੱਖਦੇ ਕੋਈ ਕਰਮ ਕਾਂਡ ਨੂੰ ਉਹ ਮਹਾਨਤਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਦਿੰਦੇ ਗੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਸ਼ਿਸ਼ਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਆਪਣੇ ਸਤਸੰਗੀਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਨਾਮ ਜਪਣਾ ਸੁਰਤ ਸ਼ਬਦ ਦਾ ਅਭਿਆਸ ਸੀ ਦੱਸਦੇ ਹਨ
ਵੀ ਨੋ ਦੈਟ ਵੈਨਐਵਰ ਸੇਂਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਮਹਾਤਮਾਸ ਦੇ ਬਿਲੀਵਰਸ ਆਫ ਗੋਡਸ ਵਲੀਜ਼ ਐਂਡ ਫਕੀਰਸ ਵੈਨਐਵਰ ਦੇ ਹੈਵ ਕਮ ਇਨਟੂ ਦਿਸ ਵਰਲਡ ਦੇ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਕੀਪ ਐਨੀ ਰਾਈਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਰਿਚੁਅਲਸ ਇਨ ਦੇਅਰ ਸਤਸੰਗਸ ਦੇ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਐਮਫਸਾਈਜ਼ ਔਨ ਡੂਇੰਗ ਦ ਰਾਈਸ਼ੀਅਸ ਔਰ ਦ ਰਿਲੀਜੀਅਸ ਡੀਡਸ ਇਨ ਦੇਅਰ ਸਤਸੰਗ ਟੂ ਦੇਅਰ ਡਿਸਾਈਪਲਸ ਦੇ ਓਨਲੀ ਟੀਚ ਟੂ ਡੂ ਦ ਮੈਡੀਟੇਸ਼ਨ ਆਫ ਦ ਸੁਰਤ ਸ਼ਬਦ
ਉਹ ਕਿਸੇ ਨੂੰ ਆਪਣੇ ਖੜਾਵਾਂ ਨਾਲ ਪਉਆਂ ਨਾਲ ਜਾਂ ਕੱਪੜਿਆਂ ਨਾਲ ਬੰਨਣ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਨਹੀਂ ਆਉਂਦੇ ਗੇ ਸਚਿਆਈ ਇਹ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਉਹ ਸਭ ਦੇ ਅੱਗੇ ਨਾਮ ਦਾ ਜਪਣਾ ਔਰ ਅੰਦਰ ਜਾਣਾ ਉਹ ਸਚਿਆਈ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਨੂੰ ਮਿਲਣਾ ਹੀ ਦੱਸਦੇ ਹੈ
ਦੇ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਕਮ ਇਨ ਦਿਸ ਵਰਲਡ ਟੂ ਅਟੈਚ ਐਨੀ ਆਫ ਦੇਅਰ ਡਿਸਾਈਪਲਸ ਵਿਦ ਦੇਅਰ ਸ਼ੂਜ਼ ਔਰ ਵਿਦ ਦੇਅਰ ਕਲੋਥਸ ਔਰ ਐਨੀ ਆਫ ਦੇਅਰ ਫਿਜ਼ੀਕਲ ਬਿਲੋਂਗਿੰਗਸ ਦ ਫੈਕਟ ਇਜ਼ ਦੈਟ ਦੇ ਆਲਵੇਜ਼ ਟੀਚ ਐਂਡ ਇੰਸਪਾਇਰ ਦ ਡੀਅਰ ਵਨਸ ਟੂ ਗੋ ਇਨ ਦ ਵਿਦਿਨ ਐਂਡ ਟੂ ਮੈਡੀਟੇਟ on naam and to realize themselves
lekin afsos na kehna payega koi vi mahatma aaya ohde jaan pichhon duniyadar bahar mukhi hogi aur reeti riwaj de vich hi oh mukti samjh baithi lekin jehdi ohna da dharm granth dharm pustak hundi hai us di koi taleem nu samjhan di koshish hi nahi karda ga balki us nu rabbi hukm ilahi hukm ਰੱਬ ਦੀ ਤਰਫ ਭੇਜੀ ਹੋਈ ਉਸ ਗ੍ਰੰਥ ਕਿਤਾਬ ਨੂੰ ਸਭ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਇਹ ਰੱਬ ਦੀ ਭੇਜੀ ਹੋਈ ਹੈ ਹਾਲਾਂਕਿ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਪਤਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਹਮੇਸ਼ਾ ਹੀ ਦੇਹ ਧਾਰ ਕੇ ਕਿਤਾਬ ਲਿਖੀ ਜਾਂਦੀ ਹੈ ਗ੍ਰੰਥ ਲਿਖੇ ਜਾਂਦੇ ਹੈ
ਪਰ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਅ ਪਿਟੀ ਦੈਟ ਵੈਨਐਵਰ ਐਨੀ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਹੈਜ਼ ਕਮ ਇਨ ਦਿਸ ਵਰਲਡ ਐਂਡ ਆਫਟਰ ਹੀ ਹੈਜ਼ ਲੈਫਟ ਦਿਸ ਵਰਲਡ ਪੀਪਲ ਸਟਾਰਟ ਫੋਲੋਇੰਗ ਦ ਰਾਈਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਰਿਚੁਅਲਸ ਇਨ ਹਿਸ ਨੇਮ and the book the religious book which he has written or the spiritual book which he has written they understand that it is the voice of god or it is the order of god and they start worshiping that book even though we all know that the book is written only by the body and the mahatmas also write the book assuming the body
guru arjan dev ji maharaj ne ਰੀਤੀ ਰਿਵਾਜ ਜੋ ਵੀ ਉਦੋਂ ਪ੍ਰਚਲਿਤ ਸੀਗਾ ਜਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਅੱਜ ਹੈ ਉਸ ਨੂੰ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਅੱਗੇ ਇੱਕ ਪਖੰਡ ਦੱਸਿਆ ਔਰ ਢੌਂਗ ਦੱਸਿਆ। ਆਪ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਕਰਮ ਧਰਮ ਪਖੰਡ ਜੋ ਦਿਸੈ ਤਿਸ ਜਮ ਜੋਗਾਤੀ ਲੂਟੈ। ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਸਚਿਆਈ ਤੇ ਇਹ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਜਮਾਂ ਦੀ ਮਾਰ ਤੋਂ ਬਚ ਨਹੀਂ ਸਕਦੇ, ਭਾਵੇਂ ਜਿਤਨਾ ਮਰਜ਼ੀ ਵੀ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਕਰਮ ਕਾਂਡ ਅੱਛੇ ਤੋਂ ਅੱਛਾ ਕਿਉਂ ਨਾ ਕਰ ਲਓ।
ਗੁਰੂ ਅਰਜਨ ਦੇਵ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਕਾਲਡ ਦ ਰਾਈਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਰਿਚੁਅਲਸ ਐਂਡ ਦ ਟ੍ਰੈਡੀਸ਼ਨਲ ਥਿੰਗਸ ਵਿਚ ਵੇਅਰ ਪ੍ਰੀਵੇਲਿੰਗ ਐਟ ਦੋਸ ਟਾਈਮਸ ਐਂਡ ਈਵਨ ਨਾਓ ਦ ਰਾਈਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਰਿਚੁਅਲਸ। ਹੀ ਕਾਲਡ ਦੋਸ ਰਾਈਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਰਿਚੁਅਲਸ ਐਸ ਦ ਹਿਪੋਕ੍ਰੇਟ ਡੀਡਸ, ਹਿਪੋਕ੍ਰੇਟ ਐਕਟਸ। ਹੀ ਸੈਡ ਦੈਟ ਨੋ ਮੈਟਰ ਵਾਟ ਕਰਮਾਸ ਔਰ ਦ ਰਾਈਸ਼ੀਅਸ ਡੀਡਸ ਯੂ ਡੂ, ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਆਲਡ ਹਿਪੋਕ੍ਰੇਸੀ ਐਂਡ ਨੋ ਮੈਟਰ ਵਾਟ ਯੂ ਡੂ ਬਟ ਸਟਿਲ ਯੂ ਕੈਨ ਨਾਟ ਬਿਕਮ ਫਰੀ ਫਰੋਮ ਦ ਬੀਟਿੰਗ ਆਫ ਦ ਏਂਜਲ ਆਫ ਡੈਥਸ।
ਇਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਕਹਿਣ ਦੀ ਦੇਰ ਸੀ, ਮੁਸਲਮਾਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਹੰਗਾਮਾ ਖੜਾ ਕਰ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਕਿ ਜੀ ਇਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਇਸ ਗ੍ਰੰਥ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਇਸਲਾਮ ਦੀ ਨਿੰਦਿਆ ਕਰੀ ਹੈ। ਉਸ ਵਕਤ ਦੇ ਬਾਦਸ਼ਾਹ ਨੂੰ ਚੁੱਕਿਆ ਗਿਆ, ਸਿਖਾਇਆ ਗਿਆ ਕਿ ਜਿਹੜੀ ਕੁਰਾਨ ਹੈ ਮੁਹੰਮਦ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੀ ਲਿਖੀ ਹੋਈ ਉਹ ਤਾਂ ਆਕਾਸ਼ ਤੋਂ ਉਤਰੀ ਹੋਈ ਹੈ, ਇਹਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਇਸਲਾਮ ਦੀ ਨਿੰਦਿਆ ਕੀਤੀ ਗਈ ਹੈ। 6 ਦਫਾ ਜਹਾਂਗੀਰ ਨੇ ਇਸ ਗੁਰੂ ਗ੍ਰੰਥ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਨੂੰ ਤਲਵਿਆ, ਹਰ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਨਾਲ ਇਸ ਨੂੰ ਪੜਿਆ ਗਿਆ, ਅੱਖ ਅੱਖਰ ਨੂੰ ਸੋਚਿਆ ਗਿਆ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਇਸ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਕਿਸੇ ਵੀ ਸਮਾਜ ਦੀ ਨਿੰਦਿਆ ਨੀ, ਆਲੋਚਨਾ ਨੀ। ਸਚਿਆਈ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਬਤਾਈ ਗਈ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਸਤਿਗੁਰੂ ਬਗੈਰ ਨਾਮ ਨੀ ਮਿਲਦਾ, ਨਾਮ ਤੋਂ ਬਗੈਰ ਮੁਕਤੀ ਨੀ, ਸਤਸੰਗ ਤੋਂ ਬਗੈਰ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਸਾਡੀਆਂ ਗਲਤੀਆਂ ਦਾ ਨੀ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗਦਾ, ਸਾਨੂੰ ਸੋਝੀ ਨੀ ਆਉਂਦੀ ਗੀ।
When he said that the Muslims created an uproar and they complained that their religion Islam was criticized in the holy book Guru Granth Sahib and the holy book Quran, which is written by Prophet Muhammad, they used to call it as the book which has come down from the heavens, from the skies. And the Muslims started saying that in Guru Granth Sahib that their holy book Quran is criticized. So the Muslims, they told Jahangir, the emperor of that time, and he called for Guru Granth Sahib, for the holy book of Guru Granth Sahib, for 6 times, and he made people read that book for 6 times to find out if there was any criticism of Islam or the holy book Quran. But he did not find any criticism there. He did find the praise of Naam, that without Naam one cannot get the liberation, and without the perfect master one cannot get the Naam initiation, and without the satsang we cannot know about our shortcomings and failures.
ਅਫਸੋਸ ਨਾ ਕਹਿਣਾ ਪੈਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਗੁਰੂ ਅਰਜਨ ਦੇਵ ਨੂੰ, ਉਸ ਵਕਤ ਦੀ ਹਕੂਮਤ ਨੇ ਤੱਤੇ ਤਵੇ ਤੇ ਬਿਠਾਇਆ, ਗਰਮ ਰੇਤਾ ਸਿਰ ਉੱਤੇ ਪਾਇਆ ਔਰ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦਾ ਘਰ ਘਾਟ ਲੁੱਟ ਕੇ, ਬਲਕਿ ਜੁਰਮਾਨਾ ਵੀ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਲੱਖਾਂ ਰੁਪਏ ਲਾ ਦਿੱਤਾ। ਸਕਾ ਭਾਈ ਗੌਰਮੈਂਟ ਦੇ ਪਕਸ਼ ਵਿੱਚ ਹੋ ਕੇ ਇਹ ਸਾਰੇ ਕਸ਼ ਦਬਾਉਣ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਸ਼ਾਮਿਲ ਸੀਗਾ। ਤੁਸੀਂ ਸੋਚ ਕੇ ਦੇਖ ਸਕਦੇ ਹੋ ਕਿ ਗੁਰੂ ਅਰਜਨ ਦੇਵ ਜੀ ਦਾ ਕੀ ਕਸੂਰ ਸੀ। ਸਿਰਫ ਉਹਦਾ ਇੰਨਾ ਹੀ ਕਸੂਰ ਸੀ ਕਿ ਪਿਆਰਿਓ, ਇਨਸਾਨ ਦਾ ਜਾਮਾ ਅਮੋਲਕ ਹੈ, ਨਾਮ ਬਿਨਾਂ ਮੁਕਤੀ ਨਹੀਂ, ਤੁਸੀਂ ਸੱਚੇ ਮੁਸਲਮਾਨ ਬਣੋ, ਸੱਚੇ ਹਿੰਦੂ ਬਣੋ। ਬਲਕਿ ਇਹ ਕਿਹਾ ਹੈ ਮੁਸਲਮਾਨ ਕੌਣ ਹੈ ਜਿਹਦਾ ਮੋਮ ਵਰਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਜਿਹਦੇ ਕੋਲੇ ਸਬਰ ਸੰਤੋਖ ਹੈ, ਉਸ ਖੁਦਾ ਦਾ ਭਾਣਾ ਮੰਨਦਾ ਹੈ, ਉਹਦੀ ਰਜ਼ਾ ਵਿੱਚ ਰਹਿੰਦਾ ਹੈ।
ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਅ ਪਿਟੀ ਦੈਟ ਗੁਰੂ ਅਰਜਨ ਦੇਵ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਵਾਸ ਟੌਰਚਰਡ ਬਾਈ ਦ ਰੂਲਰਸ ਆਫ ਦੈਟ ਟਾਈਮ। ਹੀ ਵਾਸ ਮੇਡ ਟੂ ਸਿਟ ਔਨ ਦ ਹੌਟ ਪੈਨ ਐਂਡ ਦ ਬਰਨਿੰਗ ਸੈਂਡ ਵਾਸ ਥਰੋਨ ਔਨ ਹਿਸ ਹੈਡ। ਹਿਸ ਰੀਅਲ ਬ੍ਰਦਰ ਬਿਕੇਮ ਫਰੈਂਡਸ ਵਿਦ ਦ ਰੂਲਰਸ, ਬਿਕਮ ਫਰੈਂਡ ਵਿਦ ਦ ਗਵਰਨਮੈਂਟ ਆਫ ਦੈਟ ਟਾਈਮ, ਐਂਡ ਹੀ ਵਾਸ ਦ ਰੀਜ਼ਨ, ਹੀ ਬਿਕੇਮ ਦ ਇੰਸਟਰੂਮੈਂਟ ਆਫ ਦ ਟੌਰਚਰ ਵਿਚ ਵਾਸ ਗਿਵਨ ਟੂ ਗੁਰੂ ਅਰਜਨ ਦੇਵ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ। What was the fault of Guru Arjan Dev Ji? His fault was that he said that all the human beings are the same, and he said that who is the real Muslim? Only he whose heart is like the wax, and we have been given this human birth to do the devotion of Lord. So this was the only fault of Guru Arjan Dev Ji Maharaj, that he told the reality to the people.
Keh lena bada aasan hai ਕਿ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਤੱਤੇ ਤਵੇ ਤੇ ਬਿਠਾ ਦਿੱਤਾ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਅਸੀਂ ਆਪਣੇ ਕਿੰਨੀ ਨਿਗਾਹ ਮਾਰ ਕੇ ਦੇਖ ਲਓ, ਮਾਮੂਲੀ ਜਾਂ ਗਰਮ ਜਗ੍ਹਾ ਤੇ ਹੱਥ ਲੱਗ ਜਾਵੇ, ਗਰਮ ਰੇਤੇ ਤੇ ਪੈਰ ਨੰਗਾ ਟਿਕ ਜਾਵੇ, ਆਪਾਂ ਕਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਤੜਫਦੇ ਹਾਂ, ਔਰ ਉਸ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਨਾਲ ਕੀ ਬੀਤੀ ਹੋਊ ਜਿਹਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਗੈਰ ਮਨੁੱਖੀ ਵਿਵਹਾਰ ਕੀਤਾ ਗਿਆ।
ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਵੈਰੀ ਈਜ਼ੀ ਟੂ ਸੇ ਦੈਟ ਹੀ ਵਾਸ ਮੇਡ ਟੂ ਸਿਟ ਔਨ ਦ ਹੌਟ ਪੈਨਸ। ਜਸਟ ਇਮੇਜਿਨ ਵਾਟ ਵੁੱਡ ਬੀ ਅਵਰ ਕੰਡੀਸ਼ਨ ਇਫ ਵੀ ਆਰ ਮੇਡ ਟੂ ਟੱਚ ਈਵਨ ਅ ਲਿਟਲ ਹੌਟ ਪਲੇਸ, ਔਰ ਇਫ ਵੀ ਹੈਵ ਟੂ ਸਟੈਪ barefoot on some hot sand, what would happen to us? Just imagine that what that Mahatma had to go through.
Isse tarah Krishna Bhagwan Ramchandra ji aaye, sanu Krishna di Gita likhi to pata lagda hai ki unna ne koi bhi karm kand apni tarfo nahi chalaya, balki pavitra hon te zor ditta. ਅਫਸੋਸ ਨਾਲ ਕਹਿਣਾ ਪਏਗਾ ਕਿ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਨਿਆਈ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਪਿੱਛੋਂ ਕਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਸਾਂਗ ਬਣਾਉਣ ਲੱਗ ਪਏ, ਕਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਉੱਤੇ ਪੈਸੇ ਮੰਗਣ ਲੱਗ ਪਏ, ਕਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਇੱਕ ਸਮਾਜ ਨੂੰ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਜਨਮ ਦਿੱਤਾ.
ਇਨ ਦਾ ਸੇਮ ਵੇ ਲਾਰਡ ਕ੍ਰਿਸ਼ਨਾ ਐਂਡ ਲਾਰਡ ਰਾਮਾ ਕੇਮ ਇਨ ਦਿਸ ਵਰਲਡ ਰੀਡਿੰਗ ਗੀਤਾ ਰਿਟਨ ਬਾਈ ਲਾਰਡ ਕ੍ਰਿਸ਼ਨਾ ਵੀ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਕਮ ਟੂ ਫਾਈਂਡ ਆਊਟ ਦੈਟ ਹੀ ਸਟਾਰਟਡ ਔਰ ਇੰਸਪਾਇਰਡ ਐਨੀ ਰਾਈਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਰਿਚੁਅਲਸ. He did inspire people to live a pure life, but after he left, how people started misunderstanding his teachings and how they started disguising themselves, how they started playing parts of the Gita and how they gave birth to a religion.
Guru Gobind Singh ne Sita aur Ram avatar di kahani apne granth de andar likhi hai. Unna nu bade acche insaan dassya hai. ਸੀਤਾ ਇੱਕ ਬਹੁਤ ਧਰਮ ਕਰਨ ਵਾਲੀ ਔਰਤ ਹੋਈ ਹੈ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਅਫਸੋਸ ਨਾਲ ਕਹਿਣਾ ਪਏਗਾ ਕਿ ਲੋਕ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਸਾਂਗ ਬਣਾ ਕੇ ਨੱਚਦੇ ਹੈ, ਟੱਪਦੇ ਹੈ, ਔਰ ਲੋਕਾਂ ਦੇ ਘਰੇ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਰਾਮਚੰਦਰ ਜੀ ਬਣ ਕੇ ਫਿਰ ਮੰਗਦੇ ਹੈ.
ਇਨ ਹਿਸ ਰਾਈਟਿੰਗਸ ਗੁਰੂ ਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਿੰਘ ਹੈਜ਼ ਆਲਸੋ ਰਿਟਨ ਅਬਾਊਟ ਰਾਮਾ ਐਂਡ ਸੀਤਾ. ਹੀ ਹੈਜ਼ ਕਾਲਡ ਦੈਮ ਐਸ ਵੈਰੀ ਗੁੱਡ ਪੀਪਲ, ਵੈਰੀ ਨੋਬਲ ਪੀਪਲ. And Sita was a woman who was doing very religious deeds. She was a very righteous person. But it is a pity that nowadays people disguise themselves as Ram and Sita and they go from door to door and beg in their name and they play their parts.
Aaj aur kal de sang de andar tusi inna de mutalliq kafi kuch sunoge kyunki Sheikh Brahm ne jab inna lokan nu sabha de vich aise karm ਕਰਦਿਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਦੇਖਿਆ, ਨੱਚਦਿਆਂ ਟੱਪਦਿਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਦੇਖਿਆ, ਤੋ ਗੁਰੂ ਨਾਨਕ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੇ ਅੱਗੇ ਬੇਨਤੀ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਜੀ ਜੋ ਕੁਛ ਇਹ ਰਾਸ ਪਾਉਂਦੇ ਆ ਇਹ ਠੀਕ ਹੈ ਜਾਂ ਕੋਈ ਹੋਰ ਵੀ ਰਾਸ ਹੈ? ਗੁਰੂ ਨਾਨਕ ਦੇਵ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਸ਼ੇਖ ਬ੍ਰਹਮ ਨੂੰ ਸੱਚੀ ਰਾਸ ਦੱਸਦੇ ਆ ਜਿਹੜੀ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਘਰ ਹਰ ਰੋਜ਼ ਹੀ ਹੋ ਰਹੀ ਹੈ, ਜਿਸ ਨੂੰ ਸੰਤ ਹਮੇਸ਼ਾ ਹੀ ਦੇਖ ਰਹੇ ਹੈ.
ਇਨ ਟੂਡੇ ਐਂਡ ਟੁਮੋਰੋ ਸਤਸੰਗ ਯੂ ਵਿਲ ਹੀਅਰ ਅ ਲੋਟ ਅਬਾਊਟ ਦੈਮ, ਬਿਕੋਜ਼ ਵੈਨ ਸ਼ੇਖ ਬ੍ਰਹਮ ਸੌ people enacting the parts of Rama, Krishna and the other deities and performing the plays in their name, he asked Guru Nanak that tell me if all these plays and all the things which they are doing in the name of the past gods, if that is right or is there is something other, if there is some other play which is worth doing. So Guru Nanak Sahib then tells him about that play which is happening in the court of Lord, which saints always mention in their writings and which is always happening and saints are always enjoying it.
ਸਲੋਕ ਮਹੱਲਾ ਪਹਿਲਾ. ਘੜੀਆਂ ਸਭੇ ਗੋਪੀਆਂ
ਪਹਿਰੇ ਕੰਨ. ਕਲੋਜ਼ਿੰਗ ਭਜਨ ਇਜ਼ ਔਨ ਪੇਜ 266. ਆ ਕਿਰਪਾਲ ਕੋਲਾ ਬੇਟਾ, ਓ ਕਿਰਪਾਲ, ਕਮ ਐਂਡ ਸਿਟ ਵਿਦ ਅਸ ਐਂਡ ਗੋ ਥਰੂ ਦ ਪੇਜਸ ਆਫ ਆਰ ਹਾਰਟਸ. What crime have we done that you quietly go away from us? As long as the breaths flow, we cannot forget you. If you do not believe it, put your hand on our heart and see. I am yours. I was yours ever since I loved you. Why should I be afraid when I have loved you? I have come to your door with hopes and expectations. It is up to you whether becoming the Sawan of happiness, you give us alms or send us away empty-handed. Try us. I will come swimming across as Sohani came. But at least once, sit with Ajayb and go through the pages of our hearts. Oh, Kripal, come and sit with us and go through the pages of our hearts. What crime have we done that you quietly go away from us? Bhajan of Sanchi on page 266.
Akir pal kol baithe asande phool dilande var ke hoi kaun kana ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਆਖਿਰ ਪਾਲ ਕੋਲ ਬੈਠੇ ਅਸਾਂ ਦੇ ਫੋਲ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਦੀ ਵਰ ਕੇ ਕੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਅਸੀਂ ਨਹੀਂ ਭੁੱਲ ਸਕਦੇ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਜਿੰਨਾ ਚਿਰ ਸਾ ਵਗਦੇ ਨੇ ਅਸੀਂ ਨਹੀਂ ਭੁੱਲ ਸਕਦੇ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਜਿੰਨਾ ਚਿਰ ਸਾ ਵਗਦੇ ਨੇ ਸੱਚ ਨਹੀਂ ਆਉਂਦਾ ਜੇ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਵੇਖ ਸੀਨੇ ਹੱਥ ਧਰ ਕੇ ਵੇ ਸੱਚ ਨਹੀਂ ਆਉਂਦਾ ਜੇ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਵੇਖ ਸੀਨੇ ਹੱਥ ਧਰ ਕੇ ਹੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਆਖਿਰ ਪਾਲ ਕੋਲ ਬੈਠੇ ਅਸਾਂ ਦੇ ਫੋਲ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਰ ਕੇ ਹੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਤੇਰੀ ਹੀ ਹਾਂ ਤੇਰੀ ਸਾਂ ਜਦ ਤੋਂ ਚਾਹਿਆ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਤੇਰੀ ਹੀ ਹਾਂ ਤੇਰੀ ਸਾਂ ਜਦ ਤੋਂ ਚਾਹਿਆ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਪਿਆਰ ਤੇਰੇ ਸੰਗ ਕੀਤਾ ਏ ਤਾਂ ਕੀ ਰਹਿਣਾ ਫਿਰ ਡਰ ਕੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਤੇਰੇ ਸੰਗ ਕੀਤਾ ਏ ਤਾਂ ਕੀ ਰਹਿਣਾ ਫਿਰ ਡਰ ਕੇ ਹੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਆਖਿਰ ਪਾਲ ਕੋਲ ਬੈਠੇ ਅਸਾਂ ਦੇ ਫੋਲ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਰ ਕੇ ਹੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਦਰ ਤੇਰੇ ਤੇ ਆਏ ਹਾਂ ਕੁਝ ਆਸ ਉਮੀਦਾਂ ਲੈ ਕੇ ਦਰ ਤੇਰੇ ਤੇ ਆਏ ਹਾਂ ਕੁਝ ਆਸ ਉਮੀਦਾਂ ਲੈ ਕੇ ਪਾ ਦੇ ਖੈਰ ਜਮੋੜ ਦੇ ਖਾਲੀ ਖੁਸ਼ੀਆਂ ਦੇ ਸਾਵਣ ਬਣ ਕੇ ਪਾ ਦੇ ਖੈਰ ਜਮੋੜ ਦੇ ਖਾਲੀ ਖੁਸ਼ੀਆਂ ਦੇ ਸਾਵਣ ਬਣ ਕੇ ਹੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਆਖਿਰ ਪਾਲ ਕੋਲ ਬੈਠੇ ਅਸਾਂ ਦੇ ਫੋਲ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਰ ਕੇ ਹੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਵੇਖ ਪਰਖ ਕੇ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਸੋਹਣੀ ਵਾਂਗ ਆ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਤਰ ਕੇ ਵੇਖ ਪਰਖ ਕੇ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਸੋਹਣੀ ਵਾਂਗ ਆ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਤਰ ਕੇ ਪਰ ਇੱਕ ਵਾਰੀ ਬੈ ਕੋਲ ਅਜੈਬ ਦੇ ਫੋਲ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਰ ਕੇ ਪਰ ਇੱਕ ਵਾਰੀ ਬੈ ਕੋਲ ਅਜਾਇਬ ਦੇ ਫੋਲ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਰ ਕੇ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਆਖਿਰ ਪਾਲ ਕੋਲ ਬੈਠੇ ਅਸਾਂ ਦੇ ਬੋਲ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਰ ਕੇ ਹੋਈ ਕੌਣ ਖਨਾਮੀ ਸਾਥੋਂ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਲੰਘ ਜਾਂਦੋ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ
Oh, Kripal, come and sit with us and go through the pages of our hearts. What crime have we done that you quietly go away from us? May God bless us all.